Hi, I'm Ken Tangen, and this is episode 13 of What's It Like? My guest is Diane Doyle. She was director of South Coast Repertory's Young Conservatory for how many years?
20 years,
wow.
Yeah, I'm the founding director emeritus.
Ooh, that's fancy.
Pretty good, yeah. I love it.
I've always wanted to be an emeritus.
I am.
Yeah, well, see.
There you go.
It's a lot of years of working with young people and helping them understand trauma and put on plays. Did you like the work?
Oh, I love the work. I didn't know what I was doing. I had no idea what I was doing, but I knew there was a need for the children and the theater to implement a training program, because there is such a lack of art education, and you'll hear me say this more than once. Mm-hmm. I went to David Ames and I said, we need to start a training program, and he said, okay. And I said, all right. And then I developed curriculum, hired teachers, started the marketing, and it took off like you would not believe.
Well, lots of interest in the theater. Is that because Costa Mesa, where SCR is so close to Los Angeles and Hollywood?
Probably. I would think. And also, there wasn't anything like that going on in Orange County. So it was the new kid. I mean, LA has always had acting classes and Hollywood-y kind of things, but this was theater, not necessarily film or come be a star.
Right.
You know, I was much more interested in tapping into the mind of the child.
So allowing them to become more expressive and use theater as a more of a hobby or an art
yes,
form?
Yes, not necessarily wanting them to be a star, like I said, but just letting them be and letting them play. And then the moment that they're on stage with an audience, watching that light bulb go on of, oh, this feels good, and letting them create. I mean, I've always been this passionate person about letting the actor, the performer, the child, come up with their own ideas. So, in other words, I know what they need to do, but I'm not going to tell them. If they come up with it on their own, they own it. Mm-hmm. They're proud of it.
So did they make up their plays, or did you give them plays? How did it work?
Combination of both. They made up their own stuff. It's improvisation. I brought in, I'm very big on literature, especially children's literature. I would bring in a book and say, okay, here's what we're going to do. Let's do this book. How are we going to do it? And they were like, whoa. Yeah. And how are we going to do this? What are we going to do? And they jumped right into it, and they were not emulating necessarily the pictures. They were dealing with the words and the story.
Did you grow up as a performer yourself?
No. Well, unless you include class clowns. I was the girl who would put on the football uniform at the assembly. You know, I was the class clown. I didn't care. You know, and that is the way I grew up. If you want to make fun of me, go ahead.
So how did you get into theater? That wasn't a part of your training or upbringing.
I did some plays in high school, which was fun and kind of exciting. But when I graduated, I realized I needed something to do, something to be self-sufficient. And I worked for a doctor for a number of years as a receptionist, filing clerk, and I got into nursing school. So I went the civilian, which is what we call the civilian way, and I went to nursing school. And after about 4 months, they kicked me out.
Oh.
No, it's okay. I was making the patients laugh. It's serious. It was a mutual kicking out of.
I see, yes.
It was so depressing. It was so horrible. And I only wanted to help, and I didn't know how. So I was gone. And I went to Long Beach City College to continue my education. That's the only thing I knew to do, was to just keep going. And I joined the theater there.
Mm-hmm.
At Long Beach City College with Shasheen Desai,
oh.
And David Ems was there. And we produced a ton of really good work. And with both of those men and their mentality of what is good, what's professional, what's real, you know, I became in love with the theater and went on to Cal State Long Beach and pursued my degree in theater, which I did get a degree in theater with a minor in dance, because I was dancing all the time. Yeah, and then I got my teaching credential, because at the end of my education, I realized, now what am I going to do? So I thought, well, you know, I want to be in front of people, so why don't I just see about teaching? And I spent a year in a great program there and got my K-12 lifetime teaching credential and loved every second of it, and immediately walked from the graduation into a classroom, ninth grade classroom, with a long-term sub position in downtown Long Beach. It was the hardest thing. I didn't know what I was doing. I had no idea. I had three classes of theater and two of remedial English. I'm not trained in that. I would be in theater. Anyway, but you survive. As a teacher, you just figure it out on a daily basis. I mean, that's, you do. You just say, okay, what's wrong with this? Here's what I can do, and here's what they can learn.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I didn't know I wanted to be a teacher. I had no idea.
How did your parents and your childhood experiences, how did they impact what you decided to do when you got up?
Well, I had an absent father from the time that I was 12, so he was not involved in anything. And my mom was so busy trying to survive on her own with two kids and put food on the table that she was not really involved so much in what I was doing. She knew I would survive and take care of things, but I was the first one to go to college. And I put myself through college. I had no help. So it was hard. It was really hard. But I did it. But my mom would be supportive of anything that I did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she just wanted to make sure that I would have something that would take care of me.
So you learned at an early age to be independent and take care of yourself.
Very early. Very early. Absent father, we moved every single year. So I was the new kid, hence the class clown, you know. I mean, I'm a chapter, you know, the new kid every year, have no friends, you know, and think I got the ability to make people laugh, I do believe, from both parents.
Hmm.
I don't know where that came from necessarily, but ability is pretty much a DNA thing. You can't learn it too much. No.
Was being a class clown, was that part of the way you dealt with being the new kid in the class?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Moving every single year was horrific. And by the time we got to the last place, I said, we're not moving again. That's it. I will stay in this house until I graduate from high school. We're not moving. Done. I know. Ooh. And we didn't. And I moved out when I was 19. I moved out and got an apartment so that my mom didn't have to rent a place with enough room for me, just my brother. So, yeah, I was on my own pretty early. I did it.
Yeah.
I did it.
Both good and bad. You can be proud of what you've done because you did it. And in the bad sense that you were the one who had to do it. You didn't get much help.
No, I did not get much help. And it's not a fault necessarily. It was just a matter of fact that there wasn't anything she could do. Plus, I don't think my mom understood my path. Mrs. Sally, my acting theater path. I mean, she always came to see the shows. But I think she was a little concerned that, well, how are you going to make a living at this? Yeah, which is understandable. She's still worried about it. After all these years, when I was at Falco's Rep, she wasn't so worried because it was steady. I mean, we people in the arts have a sad tendency to go from gig to gig.
Yes.
Yes. And you never know what's coming up until you kind of get that settle down situation. Mm-hmm. And SDR was my settle down situation. And I was at SDR. I was the youngest person when I auditioned for the company ever. And I was there with SDR for 25 years.
That's quite a record.
Quite a record.
Yeah.
And then I went to Disneyland.
Happiest place on earth.
Yeah, I left SCR, just went on like an hiatus. It would be an hiatus? Yeah, an hiatus for about 6 months because I had been burnt out on nonprofit theater, you know, on struggling constantly, fighting for the rights for kids, which I am still doing, and I just went away for 6 months and decided, you know, I think that I'm going to go on another path. Mm-hmm. I don't know what that is. I have no idea. And then Disneyland called me and said, oh, your resume is here and we need to talk to you. So I went there and interviewed and they hired me on the spot to be a show director to put entertainment into the park, parades, shows, parties, all kinds of stuff. And I put a couple of really well-known shows into the park, theater-based, by the way, not just jazz hands, but theater-based, and very successful, loved it. They were not promoting me. So I decided, what's it going to take to get me promoted? And the vice president told me that I had to be a consultant because they're only hiring consultants to do the big jobs. And I went, okay, so I need to be a consultant. So I became a consultant and did a couple of really big jobs. And at the same time, the Olympic Committee called me in 2001 and said, can you come up here? We need to talk to you. I said, all right. So I flew to Salt Lake.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew the producer, and she's the one that called me and said, we need you up here. And I went, okay. So I came up, and we brainstormed all kinds of entertainment, and I flew back home. And by the time I got home, they called me and said, okay, you're on. I went, oh, my gosh, what does this mean? And it meant that I had to create entertainment from Orange County. And I had to fly into Salt Lake every month to audition talent, which I did. So I auditioned most of Salt Lake City and created 17 shows for them. And we performed outside in the snow, in the freezing weather, during the Olympics, which, if you remember, 2002, we didn't know if there was even going to be an Olympics because of 9/11. So it was horrific. It was the hardest job I think I will ever have. We didn't know if we were going to even be safe until the FBI got in there and everything was cordoned off. We were wanded 5 and 6 times a day, and the entertainment came off fantastic. And Mitt Romney said it was the best thing that he'd ever seen.
Oh.
Because they didn't have that kind of entertainment until I got there, basically, until Disney got there. But it wasn't Disney, it was just me. But it was my Disney training of doing big things and of working with all kinds of people. You can imagine working with the Olympics. Oh, yeah. There's all kinds of little hurdles. Believe me.
What's been the best thing of your jobs?
I think every time I see the light bulb go on with either an audience member or a cast member of, oh, I get it. Oh, I see what this means. Oh, I want to do this again. It's not been really a production, a best production, although I have some, but it's really been watching that inner soul light up with the feeling that I can do this, or I've done this, or I'm good at this.
What has surprised you the most?
It's always surprising to me when people don't get it, when they think that art is a frill, not something that is inherent in all of us, but that it needs to be explored. But when I face obstacles of, oh, no, we're not going to do that. But that, you know, that's not important. Are you kidding me? Yeah, that surprises me. It still surprises me that people are not understanding the need and the critical need of creative thinking. Period. It's creative thinking. It's problem solving.
Mm-hmm.
I once had a plane ride with a magnificent scientist who sat next to me, and we were nonstop talking about what we do. And I said, how do you do that? How do you do that? And he said, well, I'm just getting there and problem solve. And he said, what do you do? And I said, well, I'm a director and I'm a writer. And he said, how do you do that? I said, well, I'm just getting there like you. I mean, that's where science and art are the incredible blend that needs to be explored, I think, continuously.
Mm-hmm.
That how do we come up with new ideas? Who made the post-it note? You know, exactly. I mean, it's the great thing about creative thinking and new thinking and, oh, well, we can't go there. Let's go over there. So there you go. That surprises me.
We'll be right back with Diane Doyle right after this reminder of the good work done by the American Red Cross. If you ever need an operation, you'll be glad people have donated their blood to help you. So I want to remind you to give blood and to donate to the American Red Cross. They've been doing good for a long time. When my parents were prisoners of war, one of the things that saved their lives was a package they got from the Red Cross. Somewhere in the world today, there are people you can help through the Red Cross. And don't forget to get prepared yourself for emergency situations. Go to the store and check out the Personal Safety Emergency Pack. And do yourself a favor, give to the American Red Cross. Go to redcross.org. Thanks. So, Diane, everyone has to give themselves motivation occasionally. How do you give yourself a kick in the pants?
Oh, good question. I look around and I see someone who's in more trouble than I am. And it's very bold, but I count my blessing. And how I motivate myself to teach, I don't have to. I cannot wait to get with them. You know, I don't regret going to work. I don't not like going to work ever unless I'm behind a computer and stuck in a room. You know, that was hard for me, but no, I can't wait to get with them. But when I look around and I see someone who's struggling in some aspect of their life, I don't know how I can help, but I look around and I think, you know, I'll just count my blessings today, and that I do. That I do. You know, a wonderful child, my daughter Sarah, is doing fantastic in college. There's a count your blessing right there.
Let me turn the question around. When you have to calm yourself down, how do you soothe yourself?
I call it, how do I get myself down out of the tree?
Yes.
Mindless television. I don't meditate. I don't exercise. It's mindless television where I'm not thinking of... I have a difficult time with that, Ken, because I'm always... I'm serious. You know, I'll be doing something and I'll have an idea.
Mm-hmm.
I have ideas constantly.
Yes.
And it's exhausting, actually. So I think, oh, my synapses are working great. But I have ideas all the time. And literally, if I don't write them down, they're gone, number one. Number two, mindless television really works.
Mm-hmm.
It, for me, it does. I'm not creating. I'm just absorbing. I'm just kind of chilling, you know? Just kind of chilling. Because when I get where I'm supposed to be, I'm on. I am on. I've got to go. There's no sitting back and, you know, no, I'm on and they know it.
Is there an event in your life that has challenged you to the core?
Oh, gosh, I don't know if this should be public information.
You may choose.
I'm going to choose not to, I think.
I understand. Let me ask it this way. Since you've had events in your life that have challenged you, what have you found is the best way to deal with them?
I think day by day. I think just get up and get going and see what happens today. The days get better. If I can say a challenging event, it seems to get better exponentially so that good days and then there's, you know, we all have these crappy days. We all have them.
Absolutely.
You know, and then you pick yourself up and dust yourself off and start all over again. I think that's the best way for me to explain it. Like, for example, I'm struggling with this coming summer because arts and education in California is dismal. They're not going to have summer school at my school. So I'm looking at not being employed. I mean, I don't know if your students will understand what that means to someone who's in their 60s of not being employed. And ageism is everywhere, number one. Art and ageism, number two. Budgets are just out of control. We don't have any money in schools. And they're not going to do summer school. But, you know, I got a call this morning about a gig that will take me through October. Not at my school. But, you know, that's the kind of thing that happens when you're... I'm still out there, Ken. I'm still out there. You know, I'm not sitting in my rocking chair. I'm still out there. And I also got a royalty check for a play. I have an award-winning play. I have three of them, actually. And I got a royalty check in the mail. You know, that's free money.
How fun.
Totally fun. I got a royalty check for a play that I wrote called Pinocchio.
Ah, I remember that.
It's still going.
Will Ferrell and my daughter Katrina were in that play together.
That's correct.
And you wrote that, huh?
I did.
That was a great play.
I wrote it on the fly, as a matter of fact. Yeah, I wrote it so fast. It was ridiculous. It wasn't like, I'm going to sit down now and write a play. No, I wrote it on the fly. You know, I'll tell you a very fast Will Ferrell story, which might sound like, I don't know what it's going to sound like, but I'll tell you anyway. I was at Disneyland at an event, and it was a sporting event. And I walked up to this very tall man who had a picture of Will as Elf on a button. And I said, oh, you must be a big fan. And he said, well, yeah, he's my son. And I said, where is he? Is he here? And he said, yeah, he's right over there. He's in a blue sweatsuit. So I walked over to Will, who was signing autographs, and I walked up to him, and he's a giant.
Yeah.
And I walked up to him, and I said, hi, Will. It's me, Diane. And he looked at me, and I said, Pinocchio. And he said, I wondered what happened to you. And I said, well, I'm here. I'm here, and I'm still doing the same thing. But now, Ken, get this. He looked at me, right straight in the eyes, and he said, I would not be where I am today if it were not for you. I hope you got chills, because I just did. I said, what do you mean? He goes, no, you let me be myself. You let me be me. And you worked it, and I learned that from you. And he went right on straight from there to Saturday Night Live. You know, and he's a crazy man, but I let him be crazy. I let him be crazy. I appreciate it as crazy. Also, I think that at that point with SCR, myself combining the adult conservatory members with the kids was incredibly valuable. The kids could see how adults work, what they actually take notes. You know, when the director's giving notes, and the kids are like, oh, okay. They were watching how adults work. It was awesome.
If you were giving commencement address for high school or college, what would you say?
I would say, find your passion. I would not say, find what you think you could make money at. But find your passion first, and then flap your wings and fly. And then flap your wings and fly, and the money will come. How's that?
Good. Good job.
I gave a commencement address already in my lifetime.
Was it that short?
No, of course not. No.
Well, what a, did you give me the best part?
Well, it was at Cal State Long Beach, which is my alma mater, and they asked myself and Richard Doyle to be the speakers at commencement.
Oh.
So we... This was just a moment after Vietnam. So we picked up Dalton Trumbo, and we read anti-war parts of his book, Johnny Got a Gun. I can't remember now. Too late. And we were very politically inspired. Yes, we were doing anti... It was the 70s, Ken. You know, I mean, yeah. And I refused to wear a cap and gown.
Well, I guess go for your dreams might be a better choice now then.
There you go. Go for your dreams. I can only hope that the young people have dreams. I mean, that's what my concern is that they're not exposed to enough inspirational ideas, people, things, opportunities. Because I'm so involved in the young end of the world, and you're involved in the academic older college age group, that we are teaching to the test so much, and it's so important that they don't have an opportunity to see, oh, I like to do that, oh, I want to do that, you know?
Have you changed much since you were a kid?
Nope. Yeah, I did an interview once, and somebody said, how old are you? And I thought that was, number one, wrong. I said, well, I'm 12. I'm 12 at heart.
That's a good answer.
I'm 12 at heart.
Yes. Yeah. Inside, I'm still 12. Yes.
You bet. I am. And they took that particular response and went with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because... If you're 12 at heart, I can relate to my 9-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
I want to thank Diane Doyle for joining me. Thanks, Diane. I appreciate it.
You're more than welcome. Did I answer everything you think all right?
You did good.
Okay, good.